Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you're curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QUEERFAM for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp and Modern Fertility. We're happy to have them on board making the show a possibility. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm practicing gratitude.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Let me show you.
Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, you would say.
How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just
because
we stick.
Oh, Jamie. Here we go.
Here we are. Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I felt like I had to welcome people because all we are is negative right now.
I know. Listen, we're going to apologize in advance for this intro. Like, I spent the weekend in the hospital. I now have two kids in casts.
Oh, my God.
Everybody's okay. I just have to say that. But it has been... It has been a very scary time in the Hoptel household. And so there's like a good chance that in the middle of this intro and outro, I could start crying. But like, you know, whatever. It's all good. Everything's great,
it's been,
Jamie.
It's been a rough couple days for Robin.
I think what we're going to end up doing is just doing this. Everything's okay.
It's fine. Everything's okay.
My voice is really high.
And virtual school has started for my six-year-old.
Oh, how's that going? Was day one of virtual school?
Day one.
We're on week three.
Yeah. Wow. You know, she's six, so I have to sit next to her.
She's six, so...
I have to get her logged in, and I have to sit next to her and make sure she's, like, paying attention and doing the work. I can't just leave her to
it.
By
the way, for those who can't see Jamie right now, she's, like, obsessively grabbing her hair, and just, like, it's like she's trying to make her bun tighter and more perfect, but it almost looks like she's pulling her hair out.
So. I am. I'm pulling my hair out. So she's in her second Zoom meeting of the day right
now.
Is
it live? Is it, like, all
the classes?
She has
three live meetings a day.
And then some work that she does that's asynchronous.
Yeah. And if I don't listen to what the teacher, like for the first meeting, after the the teacher said they were supposed to draw a self-portrait. You know, they're 6 years old.
Sure, sure.
And of course, she's already like hemming and hawing. I don't want, but meanwhile, she'll color for hours.
They never want to do the art. Henry will just like dash out something with a pencil. And I'll be like, was that your best work? And he's like, no.
Meanwhile, she loves drawing and she loves coloring and she'll sit there for hours on her own. But if a teacher tells her, so that happened. And then the teacher says, okay, so you haven't finished it yet. So now, between now and our next meeting, it's an hour. I want you guys to finish your self-portraits, color it in, put some, you know,
come
whatever.
On, come on.
But if you finish early, you can do free drawing or you can read, just like at school, like how we would be doing.
Good luck with that.
And I'm like, and Orion's trying to be on me. And I know I have to log in to do this. And I'm like, I can't be here to make sure she does the stuff that she's supposed to. Anyway, I don't know.
In my house, Maxine is now in sixth grade. I mean, right now she's just in bed with her leg up and iced cast and, you know, she's resting. But Henry in the other cast, fortunately, it's not on his dominant hand because his is on his arm. She can just work pretty much on her own. So that's fine. Like she goes in and if I knock on the door to check in on her, she goes, Mom, I'm in school. Or she just goes, school. Like that, like basically like that middle schooler, like, beat it.
Yeah.
But he's just like, I can't focus. And then I'll be in my bedroom working and every 15 minutes he comes in and just starts jumping on my bed like it's a trampoline.
Oh my God.
And he does these like trust fall falls and he's like, watch this one. And I'm like, aren't you supposed to be in class? He's like, yeah, I told him I needed to go to the bathroom. I'm like, but you're in here jumping on my bed. Get out. So it's like you're interrupted 400 times a day. What is it, Jamie, that we our new motto is? It's not a positive motto, but
is not sustainable.
What we need is like a positive motto that we can say afterwards, like that was so like whenever we go, oh, this is not sustainable, we need to be like, but I'm getting it.
Yeah, like, we're going to make it through. Like, this is not sustainable, but
we're going to make it through.
There's a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow.
This is as I was trying to walk my daughter like out of the car and back into the house with crutches and everything. And like I just kept going, listen, this is the worst it's going to be. It's after this, it's like, and my voice is getting higher. It's going to get better. And she was going, I know, I'm trying. And I was like, I know. And we're like yelling at each other on the front step. I was like, this is awful. This is not going well.
No, you're at rock bottom. The only way is up.
But what's our positive phrase? I already forgot it. But this is going to get better.
This is going to get better. Or the only way is up. How about that?
Okay, that works. Let's try that. The only way is up, Jamie. Oh, by the way, the cut to the first time me telling Jamie the only way is up and her like spitting in my face.
Yeah, that too bad we're on Zoom. I can't actually do that.
All right, let's go to our special thank you to our newest Patreon member. And once again, I think that we can't screw this one up. Go ahead, Jamie. What's her name?
Her name is Liz with two Z's, which is cool. Two Z's. I like the commitment. Conover. Liz Conover.
But when I read it, I was like, is it Conover?
I think it might be Conover.
Come on over, Liz. Liz with two Z's.
Liz.
But is it because of the two Z's? Is it Liz?
I think we should say Liz. Thank you so much, Liz.
Oh my God, we love you. Welcome to our community. I mean, I feel like the initiation to our community is us ruining your name.
That's kind of the way it goes. So we thank you
and all the other folks in the community for helping us cover our operating expenses and trying to help us get to the black instead of the red. And if you come to our Patreon community, you're going to get bonus content, videos, full video interviews of most of the interviews, unedited, which is nice. You get to see everything. And you just got to head over to patreon.com/ovaries talk.
Yeah, it's really great. And it helps us. So, you know, become a Patreon member, please.
Only way to go is up.
Only way to go is up. Pot of gold.
Let's talk about our interview, Jamie.
Helen, I'm going to say pot of gold. Stop yammering at me. God,
Helen's actually at my house going, the only way is down. It's all downhill. All right. Shay and Morgan are our guests today, Jamie. Right. Tell us about them.
They're two guys who just had a baby, but there's a twist, but let's not give it away.
Just
remember, we're LGBTQ family podcasts.
All right. And let's see how they made their baby.
Never straightforward.
We do want to acknowledge that there are some slight audio issues with this episode. You might hear some little clicking here and there, but we cleaned it up as best we could, and we just didn't want to lose this interview because it's so good.
It's so good. And, you know, it's COVID time, so everybody needs to take a grain of salt here.
Only way to go is up.
Only way to go
is up. I'm going
to
have Helen.
Stop it, Helen.
Okay, let's get to it. Hi, Shay and Morgan.
Hi, you guys.
Hey, it's really good to be with you tonight.
It's so good to have you.
How are you guys?
Oh, we're all right. We're sweaty. It is hot here in New York City, and we don't have air conditioning in this room, so we are just sweating it out.
Oh, so we need to get this interview over for you, really, because you are hot.
I had to turn off my air conditioner, so any minute I'll be sweating with you, if that makes you feel better.
Solidarity. You know?
Oh, yeah, no. Fans are off.
So let's start where we always do, which is with our 30-second elevator pitch about your family.
Well, I haven't practiced it, so let's go.
You shouldn't. That's the beauty of it. All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
On your marks, get set, go.
We are two gay men who have a 8-month-old daughter who is our biological child. That's only 7 seconds.
Nice. That's it. Wow. That's it. That is the best elevator pitch ever because it leaves so much in the air for us. That is amazing.
It's our fastest elevator pitch. Well done.
And you really did just take it down to a nutshell. That's it. Yeah. Two gay men with a baby who is both of your biological child. Yep. Now we gotta figure out how that happened, don't we? I mean, I think we know, but
tune in after the break.
So let's start. Let's start with the beginning. Start with the beginning of the two of you. How where'd you meet? How'd it happen?
So it's a story I actually love telling.
He does love telling the story.
It was 2012. If you remember what was going on, or 2011. Oh my God. It's 2011. If you remember what was going on in 2011, you may remember that one of the big happenings that year was something called Occupy Wall Street that was spreading through the country. And at the time, I had just finished up my undergrad at the University of Iowa, and I was living in Iowa City, and I was living in a housing cooperative in Iowa City, which is it's a place where kind of everybody co-owns the property in some ways. You sort of buy it a share and you live communally. Mm-hmm. So there were 16, mm-hmm. we had 16 roommates in my house. He was living in a housing cooperative in California.
I lived with 124 people.
What? Yep.
Did you guys?
I've never even heard of that outside of like a kibbutz.
I mean, I heard about this in the 70s and stuff. Like all my parents' friends, you know, I'm from San Francisco. So some of them, you know, but I didn't know these still existed.
Yeah. A lot of them started in the 70s and they've been around since then. And a lot of them are used by college students, but not exclusively. So my house was both college students and people post-college and just like regular community members. His house was like all university all students.
Yep. Well, how did you meet?
So there is a conference every year in Ann Arbor, Michigan for the North American Students of Cooperation, which is an umbrella organization that provides services to these cooperatives, basically. It's technically called the Cooperative Education and Training Institute, but everybody just called it NASCO, which is the abbreviation of the organization. And in the fall of 2011, we're both young, left-leaning folks, politically active. Occupy is kicking off. We both decide to go to this conference in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And for both of us, it had been a bit of a dry period, you know, just we know that NASCO was notorious for a lot of, you know, fun shenanigans happening. And so I decided I'm going to go, and my goal is to make out with somebody cute. And
there you go.
Was similar, although a little bit further. And workshop of the day, I am sitting in it, and he arrives a little late because he's on California time. And he walks in, and I look at him, and I say, "Oh." And then we were talking about how co-ops scale up, and he mentions that he lives in a house of 132 people. And so, 124. And so at lunch, I go out looking for him to ask him to have lunch with me. And I go up to him and I say, "Hey, you want to get lunch and tell me about your huge co-op?" And so we had lunch. We talked a lot about shutting down the port of Oakland during the Occupy stuff that was happening then. And then we met up later that night at a party. And then we hooked up on a fire escape and spent the night together.
In a room full of
sleeping people. It was a pretty, and then my conference hookup, we couldn't stop texting each other. And a couple of days after we met, he ended up at a protest at Berkeley where they were attacked by a bunch of police officers. And he was beaten pretty badly, so he couldn't walk without crutches for a few weeks. And I just had this like deep gut response, this kind of like tiger energy coming out of me.
Why do I have all of these feelings for this stranger? What's happening?
Yeah, and I was just like, oh man. And we just couldn't stop talking to each other, basically. So a month after,
he's like, oh, I'm gonna come look at colleges.
I was gonna go to grad school.
All of his money.
I spent all of my money on a ticket to go out and visit him in Berkeley a month after we met. And in that visit, we had a wonderful weekend, and we decided the thing that made the most sense to do would be for him to, once he finishes up with his coursework, to move to Iowa to see if we could make this crazy thing work.
That's amazing.
That's how very lesbian of you
too. 100%.
That was the joke at the time too. Yeah.
How'd that go?
So,
I mean, obviously it went well.
Ostensibly, yeah. He was going to move into a room in one of the other houses. Room. He had his own room.
Yeah.
He did not spend much time in that room.
I never slept in that room. Not once.
No, of course not.
Was that like a safety valve? Yes. Like just in case?
Oh, yeah. I had a return ticket, too. Just in case.
Oh, good for you. Because I wouldn't have gone that way. I'd be like, no, I'm sleeping in your bed. No problem.
A couple months after he moved out, I realized, you know, yeah, this is the person for me. And so we sort of talked about getting married and all that and got engaged 6 months after we met, and then took about a year more to get married. So, you know, we gave it a little time. But that was that.
Was it legal yet when you got engaged?
It was not kind quite. Of. Yeah.
It was legal in Iowa.
It was legal in Iowa. Oh. We were moving from Iowa shortly afterwards. And then it wasn't legal in New York City when we were making plans. It was legalized by the time that we got married, but we got married in California.
Yeah. So we moved to New York about 6 months after he moved to Iowa. And we've been here for almost 8 years.
Wow.
When did you guys start talking kids?
Whew.
Yeah, when we first met and when we first started dating, I was always interested in the idea of having kids. Shay was not interested in having kids. And so it was kind of left that there. It wasn't really an issue.
So Morgan, you would have been okay not having kids if Shay was not feeling it?
I would have been okay with it. I would have preferred to have kids. I was excited by the idea of being a dad, and he wasn't really. And then, you know, over time, he was like, well, maybe I'd be into it. I don't know. And then, you know, I left it alone. And then finally he turns to me one day and he says, yeah, I think we could have kids. And at that point, the read that I got was, yes, we could have kids because I know it's important to you. And I'm sure it would be fine. But he wasn't quite excited, but he was comfortable with the idea.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Robin.
I have to ask you, is there something that's interfering with your happiness or maybe preventing you from achieving your goals?
Yeah.
Like in my house, it's children breaking bones and screaming for snacks all day. Two kids in casts right now. Two kids.
Yes. Except the broken bones. I don't have those, but yes.
Well, I know that we both need BetterHelp, and it will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. And you can start communicating in under 48 hours, which I love. I love also that it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's just professional counseling that's done securely online.
That's true. Let's be honest. We all need a little help right now. Every single
so
one
much.
Of us, broken bones or not. And, you know, there is a broad range of expertise available, which might not be available locally in many areas. And the service is available for clients worldwide, everywhere.
Yeah, and you can log into your account anytime and send messages to your counselor, which I think is really cool. And you're going to get a timely and thoughtful response, which is awesome. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you're not ever going to have to sit in that, what is it, Jamie? The uncomfortable waiting room that I hate of
you
traditional
hate
therapy.
You hate it.
I do. I hate that waiting room.
Listen, this is what I love. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need to. I changed mine in the beginning. Mm-hmm. No problem. It was so easy.
I love that it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is also available.
Yeah. So listen, guys, BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Just visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily, and you're going to be sold.
Not tomorrow, today.
Today.
Visit betterhelp.com/OCT. That's better, H-E-L-P. And you can join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. It's a big deal.
In fact, did you know this? So many people have been using BetterHelp right now that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states.
Amazing. It is amazing. It's amazing. And we have a special offer for If These Ovaries Could Talk listeners. You guys are going to get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/OCT. So go get that 10%.
Get it.
Get yourself well.
Do it.
Keep your kids from breaking their bones.
So I think this is the part where we actually reveal how it is that we have a biological kid.
How did you do that? I don't remember.
Which is that I'm transgender. And I am female to male transgender. So I was assigned female at birth. And I transitioned 10 years ago at this point, about a year before we met. Yeah.
And so was part of the issue around not wanting kids having to do with your body, or was it just, I don't really feel the need to be a parent?
It was both. I'd say it was both at first, though. Like, we were both on the same page that he did not ever want to be pregnant. Right. And so, like, do you want to be a parent would mean, do you want to foster? Do you want to adopt? I'm like, maybe, sure, I don't know. Let's sit on it for a while. And then I think when he first presented it again, as like, maybe I'd be into this, I don't know. That was still looking at fostering and adopting. And then finally, it's like, actually, no, I could have a baby. I could be pregnant. Yeah.
That's a big, big transition there.
Yep.
I can't imagine how hard it would be to come around to that decision.
So when you were saying, okay, I'm up for it, like, how did you go about it? Did you know what it would entail? And like what came up for you, like thinking about what you were going to have to go through, Shay?
So I think that there's a couple of important points here, right? So one is that I knew I could physically become pregnant. So I have had top surgery, so I don't have breasts, but I had not had bottom surgery, which can sometimes impede that. Some guys have hysterectomies, et cetera. But I had not had any of that done. We were not sure at the time whether my hormone therapy would impede my fertility. There's been a bunch of kind of open questions about that. I'll say that when you start testosterone, they tell you that it will probably render you infertile. But that, as far as we can tell, based on a lot of anecdotal research and some really beginning actual research, that's really just a kind of CYA, cover your ass from the doc.
Right. Sure.
They don't want to get sued if you're infertile. And so we actually think now the best available evidence, I'll say, is that if testosterone harms fertility, it's very little. And it seems that once you go off of it, most people can get pregnant, you know, with little difficulty. It's like, in as much as the duration of the time that you're on testosterone correlates with infertility, it's much more about your actual aging, right? You know, if you go on T at 25 and you're on T for 10 years, then you're 35 and trying to have a kid. But if you go on T at 20, like I did, and then 10 years later you try to have a kid, you're 30. You know, we know about fertility and age. So it was theoretically a possibility. And I'd been warned by doctors that, you know, T is not birth control. You got to use some other kind of birth control if you're having that kind of sex that can get you pregnant. And I had started to be aware of it percolating. So before I realized I was trans, when, you know, I remember there being a media cycle around like Thomas Beatty, who was a trans guy who got pregnant.
Yeah. Yep.
That actually I didn't really remember that when we were starting to look through it, but like hypothetically, I knew that it was possible, right? I knew it was going to be incredibly hard. I had not gone off of hormones since I started, and I knew that that's part of what's entailed in trying to conceive and have a baby. And I got to a point where I think what it really was that I had a really good network of friends and community around me, and I remember I was in a park with one of our dearest friends, who's actually a really kind of key part of our whole journey. And I was talking to him about having a kid, and I turned to him and I was like, I think I could do it. And I'll be real, like a lot of the reason that I was like, I think we could do it was also like financially. Like we work for nonprofits. We do not come from money. And it turns out that having a kid in any other way, but the most like traditional, is really, really expensive.
Yep.
Very.
And so we've been not always very financially stable. So we kind of decided, hey, look, let's give this a shot and let's see what happens.
I just want to ask, like, saying to yourself, I think I could do this, besides the monetary aspect of this, like, what does that entail for you? Because I can't imagine that's an easy decision to make after you've gone through everything you've gone to be your true self. What does that entail for you?
Well, it was really, really hard. I'll say one of the ways that I've been able to describe how gender dysphoria feels is that you're wearing your shoes on the wrong feet. Hmm. And you can kind of walk around, but it doesn't quite fit right, you know? And so going back into that was a pretty difficult process. And it's really hard to prepare for that, you know, and to know how that's gonna be. But essentially what a lot of it was like was just that the longer I was off testosterone, the less well my body seemed to fit me. And of course, when I finally got pregnant and carried to term, that was compounded, you know, just the whole situation. But I also think that, like, in general, and, you know, we can delve into this more when we talk about my full journey, like, pregnancy sucks. Like,
yes, it does.
Yes, it does. Like, we need to be real about that. It is just a miserable, like, I know that there's, like, some small proportion of people, and I hope they don't get mad at me when they hear this, who feel like they're just, like, you know, earth goddesses. They're shiny all the time. They've got luxurious hair. Their skin is great. They feel good. I know that there's some people out there who feel great being pregnant. I think for most people, it is just miserable, and it's hard on your body, and it feels wacky and weird.
And you're not allowed to talk about it.
And you're not allowed to, right.
No.
And,
like, no.
And you're not allowed to talk about it. And also the narratives that we have around it that I think are used to make it less shitty are all, like, deeply tied up in, like, gender roles and norms.
Totally. Totally.
So it's like, you know, look at your amazing body, you earth goddess, you're making life.
Yeah.
And it's like, none of that shit is relatable to me at all. And I think the closest I got to actually, like, engaging with the process was the sort of weird, like, science side of it. Like, oh, it's growing hands now. It has fingers. Wow. I have 40% more blood in my body now. That's amazing. Yeah.
So, like, gave you something else to focus on other than the,
being a science experiment.
Yeah.
I think got you through part of the first trimester. And then it was just like, oh, God.
At least two weeks.
Yeah.
We always say, like, that everyone acts like, if you act like you don't like the pregnancy, like, you actually hate your kid. Yeah. And it's just like, no, I just don't like being pregnant. I love the kid, but I don't like this part
of it.
Which
is the same experience for parents with kids that are in the world. It's like, it's still fucking hard.
It's so hard. Yeah. But that's what I was also going to say. Like, Shay, I can imagine you feeling more pressured. Like, for people to say, well, you know, you shouldn't be pregnant anyway. You're a guy. So then there's, like, a pressure to try to enjoy it so that they can't say, well, this is why you shouldn't be pregnant. Just like, this is why you don't get along with your daughter. You didn't give birth to her, you know, that kind of thing.
Thankfully, I didn't experience any of that. You know, I guess we should talk about the whole kind of journey and story, right?
Like, yeah.
So, yes, please. So we first started trying in 2017. And I went off testosterone in January, I think, or February. And unfortunately, that year, we actually had two miscarriages inside of 6 months, which was really, really hard. And I was acutely depressed and sort of borderline suicidal for part of it. And, you know, Morgan helped out and my friends helped out. And I spent a lot of time in the park. We live right next to Prospect Park, which is really lucky. And I figured out how to talk about it with friends. You know, I had not told people that we were going to try to have a baby. It felt really personal. And I kind of figured out at a certain point how to talk about it and how to share it. And it's funny because one of the things that was happening that year, it's 2017, right? So Trump had just assumed the presidency. And he kind of kicked it all off by immediately starting to talk about, how are we going to get trans people out of the military? How are we going to do all this other stuff, right? And I had been part of this community of, this is going to sound way off the wall, and we don't have to go down this rabbit hole super long, but I've been part of this community of evangelical Christians who are working to deal with climate change for a couple of years at that point. And none of them knew that I was transgender. Oh. Most of them knew I was gay at that point. I had sort of shared that with them. But they didn't know I was transgender. And I had been pretty quiet about it. I pass almost all the time. Nobody ever guessed it about me. And so I had the sense when this was happening that none of them knew that they knew somebody who was transgender, right? And they're good people, right? They just didn't know that it was close to home for them. And so early that year, when Trump was starting to announce all these kind of attacks on the rights of trans people, I called up some of them and I said, hey, you need to know this about me, because I'm going to make it public with everybody I know. Most of the time, I just felt like it wasn't that relevant because nobody needs to know what I have in my pants, you know?
Yeah.
And so I talked to them, and they actually had one of the most lovely responses I've ever gotten to kind of coming out to somebody or sharing this part of myself, where one of them, really dear, wonderful friend of mine, said basically, I didn't know. And my immediate response is that I'm very, very grateful that you told me. And I'm also really concerned that I may have ever said anything that caused you to feel unwelcome or that you couldn't share this part of yourself with me.
Wow.
Oh, that's such a nice response.
It was really wonderful. And he's a dear, dear friend of mine. And I can't wait until this pandemic is over so I can go visit him again. And then he also said, how would you like our community to learn about it? Do you want to tell them? Do you want me to tell them? How do you want to broach that with people? And I gave it to him to kind of share with people. And he did a great job of it. And they've all been perfectly accepting and wonderful. I mean, I think that some of them are sort of not really sure what to do or say or how to relate, but none of them have been anything but welcoming. And I'll say also that they have been wonderfully supportive throughout our pregnancy journey and through my losses, which happened that year and all that stuff. So, you know, I think that it was a moment where, having lived for, at that point, 7 years as a man and not really having this encounter with the gender I was assigned at birth, right? It was a moment where that was more a part of my public life with my friends than it had been previously, right? Like before that, I could kind of live my life, and the fact that I was transgender never came up in any kind of conversations or any kind of engagement with stuff and with people. And so I was a little nervous about that, to be real. And this came up when I finally had a viable pregnancy. I think that the script around pregnancy is very clear for people. Like, it's like, oh, I'm pregnant. Oh, congratulations. And so when I would tell people, just so you know, I'm transgender. I've been living as a man for almost 10 years, but I'm pregnant. I'm having a baby. That's a thing I can do. They didn't respond with a bunch of weird, intrusive questions. They just responded of like, oh, congrats. Like, I know what to say when somebody tells me about having a baby, even if I'm surprised. So congratulations. This is great. Are you excited? You know, what's this like?
Wow.
Boy or girl, you know, all that stuff. The normal social script. And similarly, although I think it's definitely much more fraught in our society still, like the miscarriages, the pregnancy losses, there's a somewhat of a script around that, right? It's I'm sorry for your loss. Are you okay? Do you need anything?
Are you saying, like, in a weird way, almost people found it easier to talk to you about you being pregnant than you telling them you were trans? Because they had a thing and knew how to say?
Yeah, definitely. I think we should probably get to the point where I'm actually going to have the baby, though, at some point in this narrative, sure. Right?
Sure.
So we had those losses. They were really devastating. And we decided, let's take a break. Like, we're going to take a break. So I went back on the hormones for another year or so. That was my 2018. Had a wonderful recovery year. Was my best self. One of the ways we recuperated was by, on a whim, because we just had such a shitty year, signing up for a Grand Canyon backpacking trip.
That's my dream.
That sounds amazing.
Amazing. We loved it. And we said, okay, cool. Let's do that again next year, but we'll plan our own trip. So it's not going to be a trip that's guided by anybody else. Like, let's jump in and do that. In 2017, when we had tried the first time, it took about 3 months from when I went off hormones to when I started ovulating again. So got pregnant about 4 months later. In 2019, we had planned to try to conceive with the idea that I was going to get pregnant after our backpacking trip and we were going to go for it. And one of the important things in the interval in this kind of gap year, the 2018 year, is that we discovered that my health insurance covered fertility checkups after you'd had two losses. And so we had a whole panel workup done, and the fertility clinic was pretty sure that the only thing was just bad luck. Like, there was no reason, except one thing they did find is that I had a slight inflammation of one of my fallopian tubes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't blocked, but they thought that might raise my chance of having a ectopic pregnancy. So they wanted to keep an eye on me when we were ready and, you know, really make sure that it was a uterine pregnancy, that we were totally ready to go.
Also, if you want to know about the experience of a gay man giving a sperm sample.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah,
we should go into that.
That's like, we'll talk about that later.
So, because I'm setting up the story really nicely, neatly here.
Yeah,
so it's about a week before we're scheduled to go on this Grand Canyon backpacking trip. We're going to fly out. And I realize that I'm feeling a little funny.
I feel like I called it.
You did, because you felt my uterus
get hard
and realized that it was hard. And that was how we had noticed that I was pregnant the first time around, was that you could palpate my uterus and feel that it was harder. And so I'm pretty skinny. And for some reason or another, my physiology just makes it really easy to tell. Uh-huh. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't really feel like I did the first time yet.
Like, nope, you're
pregnant. And so I took a pregnancy test and it was positive.
Oh.
And it was a week before we were going to spend 6 days in the backcountry. We had organized this trip. We had made all the plans. We had gotten the permits, booked our travel. We were going to drive to the north rim of the Grand Canyon, which is super remote, and be completely off grid
for six days
with a sat phone.
Wow.
And so I called the fertility clinic and we had no idea what the fuck to do. And we were freaking out, like, internally deeply. And they, you know, measured my HCG levels and they did some ultrasounds. And we did that, I think, 3 times that week.
Yeah.
It was pretty early. It was going to be, you know, 5-6 weeks when you're in the Grand Canyon, but that a fallopian tube rupture at the bottom of the Grand Canyon is, like, not a survivable experience.
No.
You will die.
No.
No.
And so we wanted to see if we could confirm that it was a uterine pregnancy at that time.
Oh, right? God.
Yeah.
And so we got cleared by our fertility doctor 24 hours before our flight to go on the trip.
I would say we got tentatively cleared. It was, we still can't confirm that it's not going to be ectopic. It seems likely that it's a uterine pregnancy. If you feel any of these things, call a helicopter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, so we're going.
Basically, yeah. Like,
that's
how else
not
are we
stressful
do
at all.
And I was like, I was a mess on that trip. I was not in my best headspace, but we did it. And I started getting morning sickness about halfway through.
Oh, my God.
But we did it. And it was amazing. And so, you know, that was Rosa's first camping trip.
Do you guys want to talk a little bit about some of the insurance stuff that you went through with the pregnancy?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the lucky things is that at least I think that Trump is trying to undo this right now, but under Obamacare, they actually prevented sex from being a discrimination, like legally discriminatory, for health insurers. So what that means essentially is that there were many, many cases in the past of trans women being denied like mammograms, even though trans women, people who are male assigned at birth, can get breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. And the reverse of that too,
right? Trans men also being denied mammograms.
Right.
And it depends on your legal gender and how that's listed with your insurance company, right? So I've been legally a male for quite some time.
By the way, what does someone have to do to get that legally changed?
Oh, Lord.
Now,
so
today.
It depends on the state you were born in and the state that you're living in. The state that you were born in is relevant for like your birth certificate, for example. But one nice thing that the Obama administration did is that they made it really easy to get a passport with your legal gender marker. All you had to do was get a note from a physician that says that you live your life as the sex that you identify with, right? And so, and that's still the case, actually. Trump has not undone that yet, which is great.
He hasn't got to it yet.
Yeah, I know. What that means is that all of the, as you know, from going to the DMV, et cetera, you have to provide different forms of identification. Some of those identification forms have your sex on them and some of them don't, right? Like, so your social security card doesn't have your sex on it, mm-hmm. but your passport does. And so nowadays, if you've gone through the Obama process to get your passport updated with the sex that you identify with, you can get an ID pretty easily in various states with just that and your social security card. So insurance, I've listed myself as male. And the way that that's come up is that all the insurance companies, to save costs, they have algorithms that automatically reject charges that don't seem right. And that includes sex-based charges, right? So if you are legally male and you're going in for, say, a D&C for a missed miscarriage, it will automatically get rejected.
which is what happened after we had our first miscarriage. And they got a phone call saying, oh, by the way, we denied your claim. I think this was before
it was the day we went to go get the procedure. They had filed a pre-authorization with my insurance. God. And we got a phone call saying we denied this. Your claim was denied. And bless Morgan, he spent like an hour on the phone with calling various people to get that figured out. And the outcome of that was that they put an basically they put a manual override in my file specifically to not automatically deny any procedures based on my sex.
Which also, the billing department in the hospital should not have called you. Like, they really should have fixed that. And so I used to work in healthcare. And so
Thank God.
Like, no one, I don't know how anyone does this. Like, I.
Well, because, like, my question is, like, what if they had just said, like, I'm sorry, we're just denying it. And I would have been like, okay, because I wouldn't have known. Yeah, I wouldn't have, like, what am I going to say? Get me your supervisor? Like, I wouldn't, and that never works
also,
when I do that.
It's the day of your procedure. Yeah. Like, really? You're going to call me right now?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
You are removing a dead embryo from my body that I wanted. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And
it's awful.
And no one offered. So, I mean, the billing department calls us, and, you know, our doctor's office was lovely. They'd worked with other trans people before. But they called us with no solution. They were just like, by the way, your insurance denied this.
And you owe this much money?
Well, it wasn't even that. They were just like, the insurance denied it, and they didn't know what to do. And I see Shay having this phone call, and I just took the phone, and I said, this is unacceptable.
Good for you.
This is what you need to do to fix this. And also, I'm going to get on the phone right now and get the insurance to get their shit together, because this is unacceptable, and we'll see you for this procedure, and you are going to make sure that this goes through.
Good for you. I wouldn't have had the wherewithal. I wouldn't have known what to do.
Yeah. And Morgan, since you did work in healthcare, I don't know if you can answer this, but is there a case in some insurance where they could have denied it because you are male?
Legally, under that's part of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, is that they legally can't do that. You know, the number of hours that trans people lose to this kind of bureaucracy every year must be phenomenal. But there are like more severe consequences too. There is a old school documentary from the early 2000s, I think, called Southern Comfort, about a trans man who couldn't access a reproductive health care. And that's partly mostly due to medical system discrimination. I don't know if it was insurance, but I think it was just doctors. And he ended up dying of ovarian cancer. And that's I think discrimination in healthcare is one of the biggest things that trans people go through. And I'm lucky that I have a good job. I'm in a union. We've got really good healthcare benefits. But a lot of trans folks, especially people who work, you know, jobs in the informal economy, stuff like that, they have a really hard time accessing appropriate healthcare.
Yeah.
So I've had like two really bad experiences in the healthcare system in this whole process. And the first one, like at the very beginning of our journey, and then like kind of towards the very end of it. So the first pregnancy, I went in for my growth scan at, you know, 12 weeks or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I walk in there, and the ultrasound tech comes in and looks at me and asks, so do you have girl parts?
What?
And I was like, first of all, not what you call that. Secondly,
I'm sorry, are you a grown-up?
I'm here for a transvaginal ultrasound. Like, how do you think the baby got there?
You know? Also, isn't this the person doing the transvaginal ultrasound? So why would you call it girl parts? What?
This is in an obstetric radiology unit.
Like, you're like, did you just say that out loud?
Yeah, he just puts No one should ever say girl parts.
No.
Don't say girl parts to a child.
Yeah, no, that's creepy. It's creepy.
You know Robin?
Yeah, Jamie.
You know this. I know this. Knowledge is power.
It's true.
You know that, right?
It's true.
And when you know more, you can make better decisions for your body, your health, and your future, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know on this podcast, there aren't many decisions bigger than having a child.
Mm-hmm.
But for many folks, especially those of us in the LGBTQ world, our fertility is a huge question mark. You know, we don't accidentally get pregnant very often in this community.
That's true. Well, that's why modern fertility was created, which is amazing. It's easy and affordable. It's the best way to test your fertility hormones at home. And all you have to do is a simple prick of your finger. You just mail it in with the prepaid label and you'll get your personalized results within 10 days. That's How great is that?
I know. You know, because traditional testing with your doctor can cost over $1,000 and possibly more, depending on how long it takes you. But modern fertility only costs $159 and you get the same information. And if you go to modernfertility.com/OCT, you can get $20 off your test.
Amazing.
Which is amazing. Also, if you have an HSA or an FSA, you can use those dollars on Modern Fertility. And Robin, tell them what they're going to get.
I sure will, Jamie. It's like we're on The Price is Right. You'll get insight into how many eggs you have, hormone levels, and any reproductive flags. The results go in-depth into what every hormone means, and you can also talk one-on-one with a fertility nurse to review your results and options for next steps. Bob, thank you for asking. That was my Price is Right.
Yes. And if you want kids today, or maybe one day, you need information to make the decision that's best for you.
Yes. So, in all seriousness, right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT. That means your test will cost $139 instead of the hundreds or even thousands that it can cost if you go to a doctor's office.
It's amazing. Get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT. That's modernfertility.com/OCT.
Check your eggs.
Knowledge is power. I don't know why I just said it like that.
You mentioned earlier that you said you pass quite often. You know, that's part of like your experience. And so it had to be really, I don't know, hard, weird. I don't want to put words on it for you, but like to then go back and then to be like fighting with all the gender crap, you know, for people, for other people.
It's also just been extremely weird to be in these spaces that are so thoroughly gendered, which is like, you know, what do you do when you're in the maternal fetal evaluation unit, right? Yeah. And you are sitting in there and you are like two dudes sitting together in this room that's full of like women. And like, we got a couple of like weird looks, mostly from like other patients, but you know, nobody was inappropriate. I mean, we live in New York City. I think that's a lot of it. We had the best OB of all time. Shout out to Dr. Allegra Cummings at Mount Sinai. She had not had other trans patients. They had been in her practice with a different physician. And that OB ended up moving out of the city kind of between our first and second pregnancies.
Oh, and that's initially why you had gone to that practice.
That's why we had gone to that practice.
Right, of course.
And then they passed us to her when we found out that I was pregnant the second time, which was also, we also lost that pregnancy. And I knew that I liked her, because she hadn't lied to me about what it would be like to miscarry naturally, right? So the first one I had a DNC, the second one we caught it a little earlier, and she asked me, she gave me my options, and I decided that I didn't want to take the medication. I just wanted to kind of wait for it to happen naturally. By the time we'd gotten confirmation I was miscarrying, I was already starting to bleed a little bit, so we were pretty sure that it was going to go forward. And I was really healthy. Didn't have any complications, anything like that. And I know from the internet that a lot of doctors lie to their patients where they say it's just going to be like a bad period.
And it's not.
It is not.
And what I appreciated about her was that what she told me was, it's going to be very painful and it's going to be pretty scary sometimes, but you're going to get through it okay. And here's what you want to watch for to know that you need some more help. Here's what you can do to handle the pain. Here's what I've heard helps people. Here's how long it should take. And if you have any questions, call us anytime.
Yeah.
And I knew that, that was the moment where I was like, thank you for not lying to me. Like, I know what to expect now. And it was exactly like what she said. So during this whole process, one of the things that we talked about was just like, how can we make this a better experience? Like, how can we deal with labor and delivery and postpartum recovery and all that stuff? And what ended up happening, I had a really tough pregnancy, and we can talk more about this. It was bad in all the ways that aren't really dangerous, but just really shitty.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah. And so at the end of it, we were deciding how I wanted to deliver the baby. And, you know, there were a couple options, and we discussed it. And, you know, some trans men feel more comfortable having an elective C-section. They feel like if they were to have a vaginal delivery and it were to have, like, multiple complications, it just would be really hard for them to recover from. or just the idea of being through a standard labor is just like really unappealing for them. And then for other people, like we know also that generally C-sections are harder to recover from than vaginal deliveries. And so we kind of went back and forth on it for a while. And Dr. Cummings was just like, look, you'll do fine either way. Like, yeah, C-section tends to be a little rougher, but like people recover from it. You get through it. You can decide essentially until like a week beforehand or whatever, what you want to do, and we'll figure it out. But I had gestational diabetes, and Mount Sinai is really aggressive in care for gestational diabetes. And so they want to induce you at 39 weeks usually. But then it turned out that my gestational diabetes was really, really well controlled by diet. So my sugars were only high like once or twice. And it was like, for my birthday, I made a bunch of pastries and I ate one, you know, like it was one of those kind of one-off things. We knew my sugars were going to be high. It was fine.
And by one, I mean a box.
Yeah. And so when I hit about 36, 37 weeks, they were like, oh, we don't need to induce you. And I was like, but could you though?
Yeah, I'm done.
I want to have an induction at 39 weeks. And so we decided to go for an elective induction starting on, you know, 38 weeks and 6 days with the goal of having the baby at 39 weeks exactly. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Cummings scheduled it then knowing that she wasn't actually working labor and delivery at that time.
Oh.
So she could solely focus on us.
Oh,
that's amazing.
She briefed the nurses. She briefed everybody who was going to be attending us, the residents, et cetera. They were all aware of what my needs were. We put signs on the door for both delivery and also postpartum that said, I use he, him pronouns, no lactation education, please, because I had zero interest in doing that and I can't.
Yeah. And do not want to have that conversation.
Don't want to have that conversation with anybody. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And it was perfect. You know, we didn't suffer any bullshit. People were really, really respectful. I'll say in like postpartum, the nurses almost always got my pronoun wrong at first and then always corrected themselves. And I think it's just like, if you're handling, you know, 100 patients in a week and all of them use female pronouns, yeah. Like,
well, like they'd come in and be like, how's mommy or something, right. Like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. Thank God. Hey, no, they didn't.
There was no mommy.
No mommy, no mama, none of that bullshit. And Morgan did a lot of this groundwork. So if you are out there listening to this and you're like, how can I support, I am a cisgender gay man and I want to support my transgender male partner who's having our baby.
Yes.
Here's what you do. You reach out to the patient advocate, the nurse patient advocate. Is that her title?
I think so, yeah.
And you talk with her about it and you figure out what your partner needs and then you work with them to secure it. And so we connected with this person who we also had the good intel as being a really big LGBT ally.
That's really great because we hear so many, you know, like it's just refreshing.
Yeah, we
hear
so many negative stories.
I'll also say that like I had a particularly good experience with an elective induction and a birth experience.
Yeah. I have a question for you. How long before you could get back on tea?
Oh, 2 weeks. And
oh, that's amazing.
There's not really a lot of studies. Like we don't know, but my doctor was just like, look, I just want to make sure that you're not having any long-term bleeding problem, like significant bleeding before you go back on tea, which can like change your platelets and your iron levels and stuff like that. So, you know, she said 2 weeks. I went back on 2 weeks exactly after, been on ever since.
Wow.
Amazing.
I mean, there are some trans men out there. So like transition is super personal for people. Like some trans men don't go on T. Some of them don't have top surgery. Some trans men decide that they want to chest feed or breastfeed. And there's like a lot of conflicting medical opinions about whether you should be on T while chest or breastfeeding. Like, do the hormones pass through in the milk? Does that matter? We don't really know. And so it's really like a sort of comfort of the person who's feeding. Some people decide to not go on tea while they're chest feeding. Some people decide to go on smaller doses, et cetera. But I wasn't doing that. So I just went right back on it. And our baby has been formula fed from the beginning.
For me, the hardest pregnancy sucked. I hated pregnancy. But really the hardest part of the whole process was the post-pregnancy hormones, the post-pregnancy body, all the issues that came up after the pregnancy. Did you feel any of that? Or do you think that like the tea helped you get back
to... Did you get to bypass any of that crap?
No, I didn't get to bypass it. I had really bad baby blues. Like, it was like clockwork. Like, it was 7 p.m. every night, and I just felt like the walls were closing in for the first, like, 2 weeks after, right? Mm-hmm. And then I had some postpartum depression stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Are you going to do it again?
No. We're not going to. No, absolutely never again. No. Fuck no.
Okay, before we stop, Morgan, you had mentioned donating your sperm, and I want to hear that story.
When we were going through fertility testing, we wanted to make sure that my sperm were also viable, because we had 2 miscarriages, and we didn't know why, and there were no clear reasons why we had multiple miscarriages. So I came in to give a sperm specimen, and they brought me back to the specific room where you give sperm, and it's a tiny room with a little metal box on the wall where you leave the sample, a love seat, a computer, and a waste bin full of tissues. Yeah. And so they brought me to the room and they said, you know, there's a computer if you want to look at anything. There are some videos. And so I went and I sat down and I thought, you know, I just have to check. And so I took one of the tissues and I moved the mouse on the computer and I opened. There were 2 folders, identical folders, and they were filled with straight porn. Yeah. And it was the weirdest thing of, like, let's say there were maybe 12 videos and they were every mainstream porn genre, like ass porn, tit porn, brown woman porn. It was just really, wow. Really
straight.
And
but also that they thought about hitting different genres is really gross.
The guys probably write in after and they're like, you really should add this kind
of
porn.
Some spanking videos in there, for God's sakes.
I'm sure it was. And so, you know, I didn't watch any videos and I gave a sample. And then when we met with our doctor the following week, you know, I said, you really need to look at this computer. And she said, oh, I thought she thought that they'd done work on it. And this was actually like the better product of, they're trying to make sure that there was something, but like, it was weird.
What about, like, other than our situation, like, what about bisexual men who want to watch gay porn? Like,
yeah. Maybe
right. Or like, or gay men who are using a surrogate.
Yeah.
Right. Or gay men who are donating to a lesbian couple.
There's plenty of gay men that would be in there.
Yeah.
I have one more thing that I really want to share.
Yes, please.
I think that like I said before, I kind of dissociated from the whole experience of making our daughter. Right. And there was one of our deep desires as human creatures is engage in like meaning making work, right? And like there was one thing that I think really cut through that for me. It wasn't any of the stuff around, you know, participating in the miracle of life or things like that. But it's actually that I have a friend who is an advocate and organizer who does a lot around women with pelvic pain and especially with sexual pain. And she asked if I would come to a retreat that one of her friends was doing for women with vulva and pelvic pain. Mm. And a lot of it is working to dismantle taboos and experiences like that. And she said, look, I know that you don't identify this way. I don't have a pelvic pain disorder and I'm not a woman, but you have an experience of having to advocate for yourself in a healthcare setting, which we find is such an issue for women with pelvic and vulvar pain. And also, we're looking to have somebody come and talk about this as a political issue, right? As an issue of people with rights, as an issue of these kind of systems of oppression that we're all interlocked in, whether the, you know, patriarchy and homophobia and stuff like that. Can you come and talk about that experience with these women? And so I got to come in with this group of women and share my experience and share also that, like, the care that I've gotten, both my transition care and also my OB care, is the result of other trans people fighting really hard for good medical care for our community. And that it's proof that people organizing and coming together and working to influence the medical system can make it more responsive to the needs of everyday people. And I was like 36 or 37 weeks pregnant at that point. And it was like one of the few moments that I felt like, oh, maybe this experience has this sort of deeper salience besides just being this like long, horrible slog out of which I will maybe have a baby. And so that was a really important experience for me, I think, like looking back on it. It was just this ability to kind of connect. I think that at the best of all of these experiences, we enter into the universal through the particular, right? Like it's a particular story of these journeys that people have been on. that gets at this kind of deeper truth about how we live in our bodies and how we go through these processes of love and family making together.
As someone who suffers from pelvic pain, thank you for that. Thank you. It's really hard to get the point across to your doctors.
Yeah.
It really is. It's true. It's crazy. I can't even. So
we're on a podcast, so I'll just make a big plug for my my friend's friend's podcast, which is called Tight Lipped. And it's all about pelvic and vulva pain and pain during sex for women and people with vulvas. So
Wow.
I'm going to check it out.
Well, thank you so much. You just shared so much, and that was really wonderful.
And congratulations on your little girl.
Thanks. Now we just get the extremely weird experience of being young gay dads who are clearly not wealthy with an infant, because that is a very strange situation.
Yeah. No, it's all, you know, having kids is always a strange situation. Yeah.
And you're always broke.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
it's true. But it's really funny, the people who, the first assumption is that we adopted a baby.
Oh, and right. People just assume you have a lot of money because you're gay guys.
I mean, so people either don't know how much money it costs to adopt a baby.
Right.
Or they know how much money it costs to adopt a baby and they assume that you have that much money.
Right.
And I'm always torn by, like, I don't want you to know that I have a vagina, but I also want the credit for having made this baby.
Oh, thank you guys so much.
Yes.
Of course. Yes. Oh, what an interview.
Those guys, come on now.
I know. I'm so happy for them it worked out. I mean, they did, like, that whole business, like, with the, like, you know, going into the Grand Canyon and being worried about the baby.
Can you imagine? I know. But everything sounds good. Love them. We're so glad they came on the podcast.
I know. Love them. All right, folks, this has been a chock full episode.
Only way is up.
So we want to just say before you leave us that our book is out now. If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Baby. It is officially out. It's been out for almost a week. We're authors, Jamie.
Yeah, we're authors. And if you hear the banging going on behind me, that's my daughter hitting the table, but I can't tell her to stop. So sorry, guys.
Only way is up.
Because she has headphones on because she's in her Google Classroom. Anyway.
That's great.
I know. So Kindle, print, hardcover, and audiobook with us reading it, guys.
We're still waiting on Amazon to approve the audiobook, but it should be out anytime. At the time we recorded it, it wasn't quite out yet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But it's going to be. It's going to be.
All right. So let's keep this conversation going. Join us on the social. Robin, tell them the social.
Okay. I can do this. Ovaries Talk on Twitter and Instagram. If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook. There's a community there you can join to talk to other listeners. And you can support our podcast and join our little Patreon community, which is lovely, at patreon.com/ovariestalk. And don't forget, you get so much bonus content over there. And you can subscribe to us on YouTube. And there you can see recordings of our live streams, which are every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Facebook.
Those are fun shows, so don't miss them, for real.
They really are. Sometimes it's Jamie and I expanded talk, like parenting and stuff, but it's also we have guests.
Yeah, Helen, pretty they amazing. Are fun. How dare you, Helen?
Well, Helen doesn't like anything, so if she doesn't like it, I take that as a compliment.
Only way is down.
Thank you to our sponsor, BetterHelp and Modern Fertility, and all you Patreons for helping us make the show a possibility.
Thank you so much.
We really, from the bottom of our hearts,
we're
thank you.
We're practicing gratitude. We thank you so much. We thank you.
Let's do some eggs.
Ovaries.
Only way is
up, out.
Up and out.
Up, Jamie. And out.
Up and out. If these ovaries could talk, they would say,
eggs, ovaries, out. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.